morning, everyone, and welcome. Happy New Year to you all. I would like to just once again quickly thank everyone for their patience with us while we dealt with a phone number issue from Babbel. You were all very kind and very patient, so thank you for that. Today we are joined by Tessa Williams, the iClinic Liaison Officer at RD&E Hospital, who will be joining us to talk about her role and the services they offer. So on that note, because we're just a little bit, we're exactly on time starting, I would hand over to you, Tessa.
Morning. Hello, everybody. I'm not sure. It's a bit strange at the moment because obviously I'm not sure who I'm speaking, who I'm actually hosting this towards, but welcome, anyone. Thanks for joining us this morning. So my name's Tess Williams. Some of you may have come across me in your travels when you've been at the eye clinic. At the moment, the situation is that both myself and Joe Fishwick, you may have met Joe, some of you, or spoken to Joe, and Bruno, that's our lovely guide dog, are working from home, but we're still providing support for people with sight loss. So I'll just go over briefly, I'll give you some numbers as well, important numbers you may need to access us and to contact us. So basically, my role is an ECLO, which stands for Eye Clinic Liaison Officer. I'm based at the RD&E Hospital. So what we do primarily is we support people living with sight conditions, their families and carers, so we can give information, practical and emotional support, depending on obviously what they need. We also support people living with sight loss and enabling them to remain independent. That's obviously very important for people. They need to remain independent and be able to sort of live a relatively normal life. We can give details, provide details of latest aids and equipment and technology. I'll go into a little bit more detail on that later on. We can give advice on benefits and concessions that you may be entitled to. So that could include AA, carers allowance or PIP. We provide education, employment and housing and leisure. Now, eye conditions and treatment information. We do get asked a lot of questions about specific conditions. Now, we do have, the RNIB have a team dedicated to giving information about eye conditions. Obviously, as far as I know, none of the ECLOs are medically or clinically trained, so we do have to be careful about giving specific information if it's relating to prescriptions and the condition. Emotional support, obviously, there's a huge part of being sight impaired involved with the emotional side of sight loss. And sight loss is not black and white, so everybody's experience and everybody's way of dealing with sight loss is different. An important part of our role are the advantages of certification and registration. So there are two types of registration. We have sight impaired or partially sighted, and then we have severely sight impaired, stroke blind. Now, blind, the terminology blind, actually accounts for probably about 2% of the population are technically classified as blind. So going into a bit more information, I mean, obviously it's quite a diverse role what we do, and the majority of our role is supporting the patients, and that could be, as I say, in all different areas. Everybody's condition, everybody's experience of sight loss is different, so we have to create a generic sort of a package towards that person. Now, I was asked, Tracy kindly sent me across a few questions that she wanted me to go over with you. So to answer some of the questions, we do offer, which I've already said, ongoing support for sight impaired patients as well as families and carers. We liaise closely with consultants, with medical staff, GPs, The sensory team is an important part of our role. I'll go into the sensory team a little bit later. So anybody really that comes into contact with people that are sight impaired. So information on appointments. Because we're working from home, it is a little bit difficult. So we can't always provide up-to-date information on the, you know, the state of appointments at the moment. Because of COVID, things at the moment, the clinics are running, obviously, emergency appointments and emergency surgeries. And to get, I will provide the number for the booking team to find out more about if you're worried about an appointment that's upcoming or you feel that you've waited too long for an appointment. I'll provide that number for the booking team that you can call yourself, okay? So obviously,
can I just say there that Tessa, yes, you have kindly given us the numbers for the appointments team, but also the numbers for yourself and for Joe Fishwick. If clients wanted to get hold of those numbers, are you happy for clients to contact us and we give those numbers out to them?
Yes, by all means. I will explain a little bit about how Joe and I work. So basically, we cover out a five-day week. So Joe, I'm Mondays and Tuesdays, 9 to 5. Joe does Wednesdays, Thursdays and Fridays. There is the WEU, which is the West of England Eye Unit, voicemail. Now, that is a voicemail service. I will provide, or you can provide the number, Kathy, a little bit later. So you can leave a message, and that means that both Joe and I can access that, or Sheila, we can access that on a daily basis, and we can pick up any messages that are left. You cannot physically speak to anyone at that time, but we're pretty good. I mean, we can come back to you. Now, if you use the mobile numbers, that's fine. By all means, leave a message. But for instance, myself, if you leave a message, say, this afternoon after 5:30, I may not pick that up until next Monday. So it's important. I think the best number to leave a message on is the WEU voicemail. But yes, I'm happy and Joe's happy for you to call us on our mobile numbers because, as I say, at the moment we are still working from home. And again, Sheila, I'll just introduce Sheila. Hi, Sheila. So Sheila Verrill is our peri-eclo. She covers all of the South clinics, the Southwest clinics, if we're on annual leave or if we are sick, or at the moment we're getting high referrals. So obviously Sheila steps in, bless her, to help us as well. But yeah, we're happy for you to call us on those mobile numbers.
Okay.
During non-COVID-19 pandemic, this is another question, I was asked if we would attend appointments with patients. By all means, if we were in the clinic, we would happily go along. If people are a little bit anxious or nervous or needed reassurance about the appointments, then we would attend with them. Obviously, because of COVID-19 at the moment, we are restricted with what we can actually do as a face-to-face service,
which
obviously you can understand. So yes, definitely we can attend appointments. And another question, again, I'm working on this, I'm waiting for feedback, which I talked to Sheila about this yesterday, was do we have a disability lead? I have asked the question, and I think at the moment they're trying to allocate somebody as a disability lead. But by all means, I mean, if you have any sort of questions, give us a call. We're happy to talk to you. If there's anything we don't know, then we will find out who that contact person is. And obviously we work closely with the medical secretaries for the consultants. So, you know, if there is anything that you're worried about, then please feel free to give us a call. And if not, we know a man who can, if that makes sense.
Superb.
A few common things that have come up recently, and I think Alison Badnell from the sensory team, she covered these, but TV licensing discounts, again, it's a bit at the moment I'm hoping that people understand. We've had lots of inquiries about the discounting. The discounted TV license applies to people that are severely sight impaired and not sight impaired. If you feel that your sight's deteriorated rapidly in a short space of time, then by all means contact us. We can refer you, and that can be obviously looked at again. once you've been discharged from the clinic, if you're no longer under the clinic remit, then we can advise you to go to the optician or your GP so that you can be re-referred back to the clinic. So if that helps anybody with that query. Blue badges, again, it's done on an assessment basis. So if you're severely sight impaired, you automatically qualify for the blue badge. If not, it'll be done on an assessment basis. So things like mobility, if you're sight impaired, mobility will be taken into consideration, and it's about providing the evidence towards accessing the blue badge. Equipment. Now, as Tracy knows, I am not techie, but we have a department at the RNIB that is devoted to specifically technology, or what I call techie questions. So there, if you've got anything, your devices you can't use, you want to have a chat about possibly getting a new phone that's going to help you with the sight impairment, putting apps on phones. So again, we can refer to the RNIB, what we call tech squad. So let me see. We briefly, obviously at the moment, because of COVID-19, a lot of us are feeling very, very sort of, it's been a strange year. And a lot of people that I've spoken to have mentioned that they've not left their house since the start of COVID, which is, if you imagine, if you're on your own, it can be a very, very sort of daunting time. So again, a big part of our role is chatting to patients. And if we feel, again, we're not trained counsellors, but we like to think that they've got someone they can touch base with if they're worried about anything. We do have a referral service to the counselling team, but I think, and I'll check with Sheila in a minute, there is quite a long waiting list for specific counselling. But I think, Devon and Sight, you've got something coming up, haven't you, with supporting people for us on a six-weekly basis?
We do. It's our emotional wellbeing service. That's led by Tracy. So you can refer into that for Tracy. But people that feel that they, are not coping well emotionally within this weird situation that we're all going through with COVID-19, people can self-refer in as well, so that they can contact either myself, Tracy or Louise, and just have if they feel that might be something that they would benefit from, and we can then put them in contact with Tracy, who will have a wider conversation with them about where they are.
And I think that's a great opportunity. It's a great thing for people to do, because as I'm sure you all feel at the moment, this is a very difficult time for everybody, particularly if you don't have a support network in place. So it's important to stay connected with people. If you don't have friends, families, carers, then pick up the phone, make a call. You can call Devon and Sight, you can call us, and we can have a chat with you, and then obviously between us we can decide. There are other agencies. I don't always promote RNIB. We've got the Macular Society. We've got the International Glaucoma Association. There's a diverse cross-section, and again, we're finding out things all the time. I know Sheila mentioned that she's been doing training recently, so we're always finding out information, both from the RNIB and from external agencies that we deal with, and just doing a little bit of research, because we do get asked sometimes just in quite diverse areas. And it's for us, a little bit of our role is to find out what's out there for people. Unfortunately, we don't know everything, but we can normally find out, there's something that we can tap into.
And there are so many new services that have sprung up at the moment in response to COVID-19, which is fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, as I say, it's going back to resources and equipment and things. The RNIB, we do have a massive website that is user-friendly. You can go and have a look at products. But again, if you find something, I mean, recently I had a conversation with a patient about high-vis armbands. And I'm not saying buy from the RNIB. Go online, go on to Amazon, If there's a product that suits you, that think would be useful, then by all means, if it's going to help you with the sight impairment, then do it. Another one I had recently was things like hymn sheets in large print. Somebody helping with their dog. They were unable to take their dog out because of COVID. So again, it's finding charities, agencies that can support people with sight loss. And there's loads. Yes. As I say, it's doing a little bit of research. If you can't research this online, I understand a lot of people don't have access to technology or can't use technology. Come to us and we'll try and find, obviously, an answer to the inquiry.
Fabulous. Okay, Tessa, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, sorry, I thought we'd lost you.
No, I'm still here. I suppose really I'd be happy to answer sort of questions if anybody's got any questions, or if you'd like more information about a specific area. If you'd like to, is there anything, any inquiries that people have at the moment today?
Okay, let me see. Tracy or Louise, could one of you just open up for any questions that people might have? If people could just say who they are, would help us know who's answering the questions to make things just a little bit easier for Tessa and myself, would be great. Thank you.
Talk to me. I'm not scary. Anything anybody wants to ask, anything at all, they're not sure of or they want clarification on. If you prefer, I mean, obviously it's very personal sight loss. If you want to give us a call, by all means, you can call us on our mobile numbers or you can leave a message on the actual voicemail.
Yeah, sure. Okay. All right, that's fine. Can I just talk a little bit more about the disability leave? Because that was one of my questions and my kind of reason for asking that.
Right. Of course. Now, I've asked the question yesterday and there was a little bit of... I did go back to the clinic and there was a little bit of confusion as to whether disability came under equality and diversity. At the moment, they're waiting to place a lead on disability services at the clinic. But as I say, if there is any inquiry about the disability, about obviously people that are sight impaired, come to us first and then we can, hopefully, I will have a contact name and number. Within the next few days, somebody may have actually come back to me today, then I'll provide that for you, Kathy, if anybody asks any questions about disability.
No, that's fantastic, thank you. No, it was just me explaining why I was asking the question. It's just for people who have, and it may not just be sight loss, they may have some other, they may have a mobility issue, they may have hearing loss or speech impediment, lots of learning disability. And I've worked with people in the past where this is when I lived in Hertfordshire. Where I would work with the disability lead just to make sure that all the information and support was available for the medical staff as well as the patients. Kind of why I was asking that kind of question, whether they would be able to tap into your knowledge.
Okay, we do have the RNIB, one of our other departments we have. It's for complex needs. Obviously, people with sight loss can be dual sensory, so they possibly could have, as you've mentioned, mobility issues, hearing, or other specific conditions. It could be diabetes, it could be dementia. So it does you know, it could come under what we call multiple conditions. So, as I say, I can refer for complex needs, but I would like to get, and I will come back to you on that, Cathy, the actual specifics of on what they can offer the disability lead at, obviously, at the I unit.
Fabulous. Okay, that's superb. Thank you. Thank you.
Good morning, ladies. It's Christine. I've got a question, if it's a suitable moment to ask it.
Good morning, Christine.
Good morning. Tess, I don't know whether you'd be able to help with this. I was an inpatient in a hospital a while ago, and I actually found it quite difficult with some aspects of it because I wouldn't necessarily know where things were. I didn't know that there was a sign behind my head on which the nurses wrote things, and they could perhaps have written visually impaired patient. When they gave me some crutches, I couldn't see where they'd put them. I can't see the sign. If there's water and a jug on the table, you don't necessarily know where it is unless somebody's guided you to it. And I just wondered, would your role or a specific role within the hospital be able to help with inpatient advice, how to deal with those things if you're sight impaired?
That's a really good question, Christine. And some of the things you've mentioned there are common things, seeing water in glasses, not being able to see signs. And if you're sat in the clinic and someone shouts your name, you can't see detail on their faces. You know, you don't know which room you're going to, and it is, you know, these are common things that people that are sight impaired are going to come across and face on a daily basis. But for me, it's a point of, I'll have a talk with you, Christine, but me going back to the clinic and saying I've spoken to one of the patients, and this could be a common factor with all people attending the clinic, of issues that they're actually facing. And it can be daunting, I do understand, coming into clinic, especially at the moment. You don't know what the processes are. A common one, obviously, you're wearing your mask, your glasses get steamed up, so that's a common one. And you are in a strange environment, so it's asking for support, isn't it? So, yeah, I mean, those are good points that you've made there, Christine, so I will need to refer that back to the clinic. And it's about awareness of people that are sight impaired. As I say, you're at the eye clinic, and it's about, again, training, information, education to staff, really.
Yes, thank you. And in fact, it was Cathy's question to you about disability and equality that triggered off this thought in my head, because it's almost as though there must be some sort of disability equality group within the hospital who could actually help with this as well by perhaps preparing some training for staff for whenever they get sight impaired within the hospital at any point. So. Yes,
of course.
It's Sheila, the locum eye clinic liaison officer. Is it okay just to say something, or I don't know whether I can butt in?
Yeah, yes, okay, Sheila, by all means, because if I've missed anything, and I've forgotten about the mic.
Oh, no, you covered everything really well, Tess.
Okay.
I was just going to say about the equality and diversity. There will be an equality and diversity department in the hospital, and people with sight loss, as with any other long-term health condition, sight, hearing, dementia, mobility, will be covered under the Equality Act. So, it's something that really that we could work with the hospital and the equality and diversity group to make sure that staff do have training across the hospital, visual awareness training, so that, these things should be in people's notes, that somebody has a sight condition. But maybe if, nurses could ask sort of like, when they put something down, are you okay? Can you see that? Mm. Can you hear me? Maybe if they could actually ask that question, because you're not going to read all through the notes that maybe the ophthalmology department, you tend to look at the notes of the ward, the clinic that you're in. So the visual awareness training, sort of like to ask the question, sort of like, do you have a sight condition? And can you you know, again, like I said, can you see when I put your cup down? Do I need to put it closer to you? Quite often we find Tess will agree with me, won't you, Tess, that at reception, it's quite often reception that need the training, the reception in the wards that they need the training, and then the nurses. So, but there is an equality and diversity department at RD&E.
The thing is, before COVID, Sheila and I, and part of the role as an ECLO, as she mentioned, the visual awareness training. So we, and it was very difficult because obviously the clinic staff are under a lot of pressure and time restraint. So we were, and I remember Sheila and I delivered visual awareness training to the staff. So we did a little role play with people, and I think I was a difficult patient, wasn't I, Sheila?
Yeah.
So we did a little bit, and it was quite interesting to see how many of the staff weren't aware of the things that when you come into clinic that people were facing, not being able to find the toilet. You know, not knowing where the room was, not being able to see room numbers, and as you said, Christine, signs, and just feeling that, especially if they came in on their own and they weren't guided or supported, it's very difficult. Even finding the reception desk, lots of things that they weren't aware of, or things in the way. My favourite one is kicking over the warning signs. That's my favourite one. They'll put warning signs, bright yellow with a little man on the sign, and the first thing I'll do when I walk in somewhere is kick the thing over, which is it's just an example of things with sight loss that we face on a daily basis. So yeah, Sheila's right, the visual awareness training was an important part of our role, which at the moment obviously we can't deliver, but thanks for that, Sheila, about equality and diversity. It's a good point.
Well, thank you.
That's really useful. Yeah. What prompted kind of my question around this was some feedback that I had from a lady who was totally blind and was admitted to hospital suddenly due to a brain bleed that resulted in her needing to have quite invasive surgery to her brain, and her experience of being on a busy critical care ward, and how frightening that was, but that all that was in kind of made worse for her by the fact that she couldn't see. And it's just about kind of, you know, that whether medical staff or reception staff or whoever are able to tap into kind of like advice and support from the iClinic liaison officers.
Yes, of course.
And tap into your knowledge, because if it happens, I know with different clinics they have a high turnover of training nurses. Which will be, it might be that you have to have a rolling rota of giving that training information, but you would hope that as part of the iClinic that's, you know, a priority, obviously. But within more general services within the hospital, and, you know, it's such a massive task, isn't it? Because hospitals are so big, there's so many staff.
There's so many departments, this is the thing.
Yeah,
I mean, going back to an inpatient, there's a big difference between you losing your sight gradually and then sudden sight loss. They're two different, completely different experiences. And again, it's really daunting and frightening. It can be frightening. It's depressing. And it is an emotional time. And again, prior to COVID, Sheila and I, we could go and visit patients that are in hospital, inpatients, have a chat about the services, you know, about how people are feeling, and then we could obviously refer to the correct department.
Can I just say it, Sheila, again? It's just so important, this visual awareness training, because it is dependent on the staff on the ward if they have a patient with sight loss to refer to us, because otherwise we just don't know that that patient's there. So it's really up to us to get out to all those wards, let people know that we're there, deliver some visual awareness training so that people can sort of like come back to us.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Absolutely, yeah. One of these. There it is underneath.
Okay, did we have any other questions?
I wanted to touch briefly. I mean, obviously, Alison, she did a fantastic talk about the role of the sensory team, but another part of our role is obviously referring for, if people are struggling at home on their own, then we can refer to the sensory team for support with daily living skills, mobility, maybe a carer's assessment if you need specific, obviously, care, if you don't have a support network in place. So we are still referring to the sensory team. So as I say, if you feel that you need a little bit more support at home with either, any of those areas, then obviously come to us, and we will make the referral for you.
This is Sheila again. Can I just ask everybody, is everybody, when they have an appointment at the hospital, are you able to get there? I'm just finding some of the people that I'm speaking to across the southwest, they're not able to get to their appointments as easily as what they used to be able to. I don't know whether that was affecting people at the in Exeter.
I've come across a few, Sheila. So there are some charities available for rural areas. Some of them are free, some of them you pay for. And there's also the NHS Good Sam provision, which is a volunteer service that will help with, provide they've got volunteers that will provide help with shopping, getting prescriptions, and some medical appointments as well. So that's another thing we can refer into.
And also contacting GPs as well, because some people are saying to me that they're not able to get through to their GP. And I was wondering how people had been affected again at the Royal Devon and Exeter, whether you're able to get through to your GP if you need to. I've had to phone quite a few GPs because people I've been speaking to haven't been able to get through to them. And the phone just keeps ringing for ages, I think.
I think you will. I don't know whether... You will be waiting a long time, and I can back you up on that, Sheila. It's a case of waiting a long time for the phone to be answered. Which is not, if you want to talk to your GP urgently, it's not good.
No. Again, if we are speaking to people, that is something that we can support people with, because sometimes it's like, press number one, press number two, and those sort of things can be difficult. We can sort of like maybe get through to the GP. Because of data protection, the GP can't give us any information, but with the patient's information, we can just ask the GP just to contact somebody. I've had a few people where I've had to phone the GP. Also, opticians as well. So I know home visiting opticians are really busy at the moment. We can also make referrals to home visiting opticians if anybody's a bit nervous about going out at the moment.
Can I just say from my perspective that our clients I have had some people saying that they have had long waits trying to get through to GPs, but they have managed to get through. And once they've gone through, the response has been very good. But rather than there being kind of so many people saying that they have issues with getting to the hospital, to the eye clinic, it's more about people actually not attending their appointments or cancelling their appointments because of their fears in regards to COVID-19 and not wanting to go into a hospital environment is the biggest. I do a lot of reassurance about what measures are being taken to keep people safe. And just trying to encourage people to attend their appointments.
At WeU, there are strict procedures in place with the whole the COVID thing. I mean, this has been going on for an extended period of time now. I mean, just to reassure you, I'm due for surgery on my right eye in a couple of weeks' time. And there are, as I say, there are procedures that I have to do before I even enter the clinic. So to reassure people, you know, I wouldn't advise you to go in if I felt it wasn't safe. But again, it's when you're going for a surgery, when you have your pre-op assessment, then discuss that with the health advisor. Just say that you're a little bit concerned about the situation. They will reassure you about things that are in place for obviously during COVID at the moment. And just another thing about the GPs, again, Sheila and I both contact GPs on a regular basis, and I found, rather than calling at 8:30, 9 o'clock, if you wait until later on at the day, 4 or 5 o'clock, you will get, the phone will be answered quite quickly.
Hello.
It changes times that you call.
I'm really sorry, I missed that. What time's the best time to call?
I would say later on in the day, as opposed to first thing in, which is they get the majority of their calls, would be first thing. But I would say call later on in the day, and then you could probably more than likely be able to speak to, if they're not, they're usually quieter at the end of the day as opposed to the beginning of the day, start of the day.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Sheila, as well, thought that if it is taking a long time to get through to the GP, we can email them. I emailed a GP yesterday, and they got back to me at 8:30 this morning. So they will get back really quick sometimes rather than waiting on the phone. And if somebody else doesn't have email, we can do it. We can send the email off and sort of guess about it and know that the GP will get back to us. They're very good at that. So, we have also been contacting people just to say that, you know, if you are called in for an appointment at the eye clinic, it is really important that you go, because the consultants are really reviewing all appointments and they're not calling you in unless it's necessary.
Yeah, that's a good point, Sheila.
It's Christine here again. It may be that some of the people on the phone call today would be using Derriford Hospital rather than Exeter, and we had to go there last week, and I'd just like to say I was very impressed with all the aspects that were in place to keep us safe, and the staff were really good. I'd also like to reinforce that it did take us ages to get through to the hospital in the first place, but the staff we spoke to were then very good at emailing the doctors and the other people so that we could then get responses on the phone the next day. So I guess it's perhaps the same with a lot of the hospitals, but just in case anybody's got to go to Derriford, I was impressed with how well they were dealing with it.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you, Christine, for that feedback. Okay, do we have any other questions?
My friend works at Cobham.
Kathy, this isn't a question, but I would just like to, it's Christine again, I would just like to say my first experience with my first experience with the eye hospital, which was the eye hospital in Plymouth at the time, was about 16 or 17 years ago. And I really wish that ECLOS had been in place at that point. So although I'm not happy to meet Sheila and Tess because I don't live in quite the right area, I think what you're doing is really valuable.
well, that's lovely. That should be directed at Sheila and Tess. And I completely agree. It was needed for a long, long time. And I can say that as my past life experience within nursing and social work absolutely was required. So that's fantastic.
I'm pleased to have the chance.
Is Tracy here? A question for Sheila and Tess, really. I know that you're employed by the IONIB and you're placed at the eye clinic. The eye hospitals. Does every hospital have an ECLO?
Do you want me to answer this one? It's Sheila. Not every hospital has an ECLO. It depends who they're employed by. A lot of hospital ECLOs are employed by the RNID. Some hospitals have local societies where the ECLO will be employed by the local society. Some ECLOs will be employed by the NHS. But the RNIB are working to get an ECLO in every hospital, but not necessarily employed by RNIB, just to make sure that there is an ECLO in every hospital, because it's well recognised that it really does benefit patients. That there's still too many patients leaving hospital. They go in, they have their appointment, they come out, they don't know the name of their eye condition, they don't understand treatments, and you know, we're there sort of like to really follow up, really sort of to contact people to make sure that they're in. You know, they know what's happening. They're still in charge of what's going on, but they're informed about everything that's happening to them. But there's still lots of people, you know, leaving appointments, as I said, not really knowing what's happening. So RNIB are working towards getting an ECLO in every hospital.
That's a good point, Sheila. Yeah, thanks for that. And I think the thing with the ECLO role, which Sheila will probably agree, is that we can spend that time having a conversation with the patient, whereas the priority for the consultant, the medical staff, is the treatment of the condition, doing the tests, the retinal screening. It's all part of the treating your condition, whereas we sort of cover everything else up. So when you leave that clinic, as Sheila said, and you go home, that's when we can come in and provide support with, okay, what's out there? What information do I need? We can spend the time talking to the patient and finding out a general picture of, so what are you? You know, what are your fears? What are you struggling with? So that's where we come in, and we've got that time. We can spend that time with the patient, whereas obviously the medical staff are under a lot of pressure with time restraints. They probably would want to spend, the consultants would want to spend more time going over treatments and conditions and things, but as I say, we can refer to the relevant department as required.
Okay, I agree completely, but it is also it's the eye clinics are such busy environments, yeah. Normally. Maybe not quite, they're still busy now, but not to the level that they would be pre and post-COVID. I just kind of, you know, hope that in the future that they look not just at the need for eye clinic liaison officers in hospitals that do not have them at the moment, but also, you know, they can balance the weight of that additional care that's needed other than kind of like the medical care. You're absolutely right. Nurses would want to be able to do that. All medical staff would want to be able to do that, but they haven't got the time to be able to do that. So, you know, in my head, you know, eye clinics probably need more than one ECLO. I think the volume of people going through just makes you either have that or you clone yourself. I think every patient going through would benefit from that service. And it's not just
a point of diagnosis, isn't it? It's about, you know, the sight loss journey is a bumpy road,
yeah,
and it's
absolutely
when people's sight loss deteriorates or changes that it's needed at those points as well.
And it's Sheila again. Where the sort of like link between the hospital and community services? Because, I mean, quite often when people go to the eye clinic, you know, why would they know about any of the community services like yourself,
yeah,
like Devon Insight? Why would they know? Because they haven't experienced sight loss before. So, you know, we can put people in touch with yourself. And quite often when we do contact people, it is a very just a quick, because once we put them in touch with people like yourselves, you then sort of like carry on and people will come back to us. But, you know, we are aiming sort of like to, I always sort of like say with people that we're looking at independence, quality of life and safety, and just making sure that you know about everything. You know, we're giving you the information and it's up to you what you want to take up, but the main thing is that people have that information.
And
yeah,
it's an ongoing, as you said, it's a journey, it's an ongoing support. I mean, you may get discharged from clinic possibly, and then we do not discharge patients. We are here, it's an ongoing service. Once you're sight impaired, then you can contact us at any time. If things change, then we will obviously look at your case and provide ongoing support to you at any stage of the journey.
It is interesting, it's Kathy here, people that I've spoken to, the point of being discharged from the eye clinic can be devastating because it's so final, it's it. And what do I do now? Where do I go now? Who's there to help me now? It's a really, really difficult point of within that journey. It feels like the end, but it isn't. I reassure everyone it isn't. There are still support out there.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the best things, and again, it's not for everyone, everyone's different, but I've attended some of the Devon Insight support groups, and I can't emphasise more enough how talking to other people that are sight impaired, what your struggle with, your frustrations, your fears, your worries, talking to other people. And you can even sometimes find the humorous side of sight loss because, as I say, it can be overwhelming at times. And I think it's important to connect with other support, you know, in support groups like Devon Insight, like the Macular Society, the RNIB have got Connect. There's so many different. And again, you're not necessarily going to have access to the information, but we do, and we can refer to those different departments.
Okay, has anybody else got any burning questions or things they would like to share? No? I would just like to apologise for the noise that was on my line. It was someone with a stone grinder decided to start chiseling up the pavement outside my house. So apologies for that if it's been a bit noisy in my end.
It sounded like a hurricane outside.
Oh, you know, we just think, really? Now?
Do they know who we are?
I know. It's been quiet all week and they just choose now.
Would you like me to go over the numbers?
That would be lovely. Thank you.
Okay. So this is the West of England Eye Unit voicemail service, which is available 24 hours, really. You can leave a message on this service any time. So the number is 01392 406 126. I'll repeat that again. So it's West of England Eye Unit voicemail, 01392 406 126. Now mobiles, I'll give you mine at mobile. So I'm at Tess Williams and my mobile is 077 11 077-119-588. I'll repeat that. 077-119-188. And then Joe Fishwick and the lovely Bruno, her guide dog. So we've got 07-395-799-406. That's 07-395-799-406. And Sheila, I don't know if you want to give your mobile as well.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is Sheila, and my work mobile number is 075-45-43-291.
Excuse me. Just to reassure everyone that I know there might have been people that didn't have a pen and piece of paper ready. Do not worry. If you need any of those numbers, you can either contact myself, Tracy, or Louise, and we have all those numbers for you. I know you all have our numbers. We'd be happy to share those if you've had a problem writing those down. Okay. Well, at this point, this is your last chance to ask any questions, but I know what it's like when you have a meeting or you're involved with something like our phone call today, where afterwards you think, oh, I wished I'd asked that. Please, if there's any questions that you would like to put to either Sheila or Tessa, then please give us a call and we'd be happy to forward those on, and I'm sure Sheila or Tessa won't mind answering any questions that people might think of after this event. Is that okay, ladies?
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And can I just say to you guys, thanks very much. I think these meetings are really beneficial, not only to us as they're closed, but to all other departments and to the, you know, obviously to patients and individuals. It's great to have the information. So thanks for that, and thanks for inviting us as well.
Our pleasure. It's really important for us for people to, you know, us to have almost like our virtual talk and support groups. The talk and support groups are so important, not just from the social aspect, although of course that's key, but also that people can share their experience. You know, we're all experts by experience in our own conditions. So it's important to be able to share that. But also, you know, that we can refer into so many different organisations. But also we can kind of be like the hub in the centre of a wheel, particularly at first point of diagnosis. If you are just thinking, oh my God, I can no longer work, or I don't know how to manage this, I don't know what benefits I can have, I don't know what's going to happen with my housing, lots of different things, that then we can use our sight loss MOT, which are sight loss assessments, which covers all aspects of the person's life through the prism of kind of sight loss. So there's lots of different ways, and it's really important for us to be able to still hold contact and be available for people as well. So, and we've been so lucky to have so many excellent speakers like yourself, that, you know, are able to join us in this and still maintain contact with people through this weird, weird COVID situation. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. And good luck, everybody.
Okay. Well, I think that's kind of us for today. It's only for me to thank Tessa and thank Sheila as well. Your talk has been excellent. Thank you so much. I think we've covered pretty much everything that needed to be covered and more. Thank you for everyone coming along today. I'd just like to say that our speaker for next week is Sally Yiddit from guide dogs. She is the service manager for Be My Guide. I've said that wrong, haven't I? Is it Be My Guide? Be My Sighted Guide?
My Guide. My Guide.
My Sighted Guide. My Sighted Guide. My Sighted
no, they've changed. It's not My no, Guide anymore. I must get it right.
Oh, didn't know that.
Tracy, it's Be My Sighted Guide.
My Sighted Guide, yeah.
My Sighted Guide. Ooh. Okay. So, let me start that again. It will be Sally Yidit who's joining us next week from Guide Dogs, but she is the service manager for My Sighted Guide, which is another area of the My Guide Dogs service.
New area.
Okay, so on that note, thank you everybody for coming along. It's lovely to catch up with you all. And we will see you or speak with you next week.
Okay, thanks, Kathy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.